Well, we have made contact with Joel Rosenberg. Joel is right now touring through Iraq. And Joel, welcome back.
Peter, it's great to be with you from Iraq. God bless you.
Boy, you too. You were there, I think, earlier this year, looking at some humanitarian opportunities with the Joshua Fund. So what brought you back to Iraq this time, Joel?
Well, Peter, yes, I was here in Iraq in February of this year. I was with John Moser, the executive director of the Joshua Fund, our humanitarian relief organization. And that trip, as well as this one, has been several purposes. Actually, this time I'm with Jeremy Grafman. He's the director of special projects for the Joshua Fund. So first and foremost, we are meeting with pastors and ministry leaders here in Iraq, trying to understand their needs, how to pray for them, how to encourage them, how to assist them in any way we possibly can. So caring for pastors is our first objective.
Mm-hmm.
Second objective has been doing interviews, both for the nonfiction book that I'm writing called Inside the Revolution. That'll come out next spring, as well as a documentary film by the same title, Inside the Revolution, that we're working on simultaneously. So that's the second issue. First, the pastors. Second, the book and film. And then the third issue is looking for specific projects that the Joshua Fund can continue doing here in Iraq.
Yeah, Joel, you mentioned that there are several different areas of the revolution taking place. And let's talk specifically about For the Cause of Christ, what's going on with believers there, Muslim believers in Iraq.
Well, that's right. And this book, which will come out March 10th of next year, Inside the Revolution, really looks at three different areas. See, next year, of course, will be the 30th anniversary since the Islamic Revolution occurred in Iran when the Ayatollah Khomeini returned from exile in Paris and went to Iran and, of course, set up his theocracy. So it's been, next year will be the 30th anniversary of that. And the book and the film looks at what has happened since. And really my premise, what I've been researching for the last several years, is there's really three revolutions going on in this region. The first is the radicals, people like the current president of Iran, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and the Osama bin Laden, and the jihadists here in Iraq, the Mahdi army team, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But the radicals believe that Islam is the answer, and jihad, violent jihad, holy war, is the way. And so the book and film try to look at who are these radicals, what do they believe, how far are they willing to go to get what they want, and how dangerous are they to Americans and American interests. So that's the radicals. Then the next section is the reformers. And these are Muslims who say, yes, Islam is the answer, but jihad is not the way. We need more freedom. We need more openness. We need more protection of human rights and civil rights, and we even need democracy. And that would be people like the president of Iraq, Jalal Talabani, the president of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, the leaders of Turkey and Jordan and Morocco and other countries in the region. Muslims are pushing back against the radicals, Muslim leaders who don't get that much attention in the United States, but their story is very interesting and one that I'll tell in this book. And the last section that you are referring to after the radical, the reformers, is what I call the revivalists. And these are people who say, you know what, Islam is not the answer. Jihad is not the way. Jesus is the way and the truth and the life. And the only way our part of the world is going to move forward, these folks in the Middle East say, is for us to skip back before Islam to first century New Testament biblical Christianity. And what's amazing and what most Americans don't realize is that literally millions of Muslims have come to faith in Jesus Christ just over the last few years, and particularly over the last 15 or 20 or 30 years. And that's a story that I just have not found well researched or written about, and that's where I'm spending most of my time in this part of the world researching right now. And these are dramatic stories. We're interviewing key pastors and key ministry leaders who are involved in the spiritual revolution.
What can you tell us as far as some of the stories that you've uncovered from pastors and others? Maybe share a couple of examples, Joel.
Well, I appreciate that, Peter. I would love to. When Jeremy Grafman and I first arrived here in Iraq about a week ago, the first thing we did was we spent 3 days at a historic pastors and ministry leaders conference. More than 600 Iraqi pastors, worship leaders, ministry leaders of all kinds, as well as young people, all gathered together for 3 days. There had never been a conference as large as of Iraqi believers, as far as we know, in perhaps in centuries. I mean, it was just amazing to be in a room with such tremendous worship. You know, these are Iraqi Christians who have, many of whom are Muslim converts to Christianity, and they have been, you know, they have to live often underground lives, meaning they have to live in as secret believers. Yes, they lead congregations, but those are often churches, often small and under the threat of great persecution. And here in one of the regions of northern Iraq that is really democratic and free and incredibly secure compared to other portions of Iraq, here was a place in a conference center literally in the shadow of the home of President Jalal Talabani, one of his summer homes. We were able to just worship the Lord, and people were Iraqi pastors teaching the scriptures verse by verse and helping their people get refreshed and encouraged. During that time, we happened to meet just amazing dozens of Iraqi pastors from all over the country. We met pastors from Baghdad and from Babylon and from Fallujah and all over the country.
Wow!
Now we also got to sit down with some individual believers, Muslims who had seen dreams and visions, and that's how they came to faith in Jesus Christ. I'll give you one example of a Sunni Muslim that we interviewed just a couple of days ago. He had come to Christ in a vision a number of years ago. One of the first Muslim converts to Christianity. This was back actually in 1985. But he didn't know a single other Muslim convert in the country. There weren't that many back in the mid-80s. But he's since come, you know, to find good fellowship and getting very involved in a local church, he and his family. But in March of this year, this gentleman went to Baghdad for business. But while he was there, he was kidnapped. And he told me that he five gunmen put pistols in his face and forced him into a car. It turned out these five gunmen were members of what's called the Mahdi Army. This is one of the most dangerous and bloodthirsty terrorist movements in Iraq. It's a Shia Muslim-based jihadist movement run by a man named Muqtada al-Sadr. Muqtada al-Sadr is in his young 30s and just believes that it's his mission in life. He believes it's been given by God to kill and destroy as many people as possible to set the conditions for the return of the Islamic Messiah known as the Mahdi. That's why he's named his terrorist group the Mahdi Army. So five of these members of the Mahdi Army captured this gentleman that I was talking to, this Muslim convert to Christianity, and tried to force him to give them $200,000. Well, he didn't have that money, so they forced him to call friends of his and try to get the money. None of his friends had $200,000. Eventually, they were able to get one of his friends to provide them with about $20,000 in cash, and they said as soon as they got the cash, they would release this man. Well, they did get the cash, but as this man told me in the interview I did for this Inside the Revolution book and film, no sooner had they gotten the cash than they blindfolded him, tied his hands behind his back, and drove him to the edge of town where they put a pistol to his forehead.
Hmm.
Now, he remembers feeling the pistol go to his forehead and realizing, they're going to kill me, and that's the last thing he remembers at that moment. the next thing he knew, he was having a vision. And as he described it to me, he said he was in this kind of black environment, but suddenly his sister was coming towards him, his sister who's alive, and was trying to come to him, but was unable to get to him. There was some sort of barrier. And then the next, he saw his daughter coming towards him, trying to get to him, but she too was blocked by some sort of barrier, and he realized that that barrier was the barrier between life and death, that they had just killed him. But just as he found himself down on the ground in this vision, he said suddenly two hands reached out for him. He said two of the most beautiful and tender hands he had ever seen and picked him up, and suddenly he was looking into the face of Jesus. And Jesus said that he loved him, and he said, "I will never leave you or forsake you." And he said the next moment, he was suddenly conscious again, lying on the side of the road, blood covering him, and a man who had pulled over to see if he was okay was putting him into the back of his car. So, I mean, this man had literally been shot through the head. I seen the wounds with my own eyes, Peter, and he was dead, but Jesus decided he was going to do a miracle in this man's life and give him an opportunity to testify to the name of Jesus and how powerful he is, that he will never leave us or forsake us, no matter what, in life or death. And, you know, eventually the story, I'll tell the whole story in the book, but basically it took months of many surgeries and reconstruction, but he is better. He has his full memory. It's really an extraordinary story of a man who had been a Muslim, came to Christ, and then has seen God do miracles in and through his own life. And this is just one, Peter, this is just one of just dozens and dozens of stories that we're having a chance to hear firsthand, including former terrorists themselves who have seen visions and dreams of Jesus Christ and are now pastors, evangelists, and church planters. God is doing something extraordinary, and not just here in Iraq, but in Iran, in Sudan, all throughout the region.
My goodness, Joel, just to hear that, and you think about these vicious, turbulent times over there, and that's how God just reveals himself during these times, isn't it? It's amazing.
It's really true, and you know, Peter, you talk to the pastors, and they say, yes, the violence has been very real. Fortunately, the violence is down dramatically. I'm in a section of the country where I can operate as a Christian freely. Jeremy and I are traveling. We have really nothing to worry about. We're with Iraqis who know what they're doing, so you know, they keep us out of areas that we shouldn't be in. But we're told that about 90% of the territory of Iraq right now is pretty safe, that even violence in that last 10%, Baghdad and what's known as the Sunni Triangle, is down about 90%. But that being said, the pastors will tell you that it's been the violence and the mayhem and the trauma that this country has been going through that has been causing Muslims to abandon Islam. Many of them, not all of them, of course, but millions of Muslims are becoming disgusted with the Muslim-on-Muslim violence that they're seeing.
Wow.
They're either becoming disgusted or they're becoming discouraged or disenchanted. There's all kinds of different reactions, but some are coming to faith in Christ. They're beginning to search for new answers, and that's what's really so amazing. More Iraqis have come to Christ from a Muslim background in just the last 5 or 6 years since the liberation of Iraq than at any other point in the history of this country.
We're talking with Joel Rosenberg from Iraq, author of Dead Heat and the Epicenter Project. And Joel, you mentioned the distinction between the radical and the reformers and the revivalist. And how strong is this reformer movement right now, the moderates here in Iraq?
The reformers, you know, this is an untold story in many ways. Think of this for a second. The president of Iraq is a man named Jalal Talabani. And I've met with a number of his top advisors, and I'm literally speaking to you from the city where he is in at this moment. He has just come back from the United Nations, where he gave a very powerful speech to the world, saying that Iraq has made tremendous security progress, and it's now time for the nations of the world to send their diplomats, including the United Nations, to have embassies here. You realize the United Nations doesn't even have representation in Iraq right now because of terrorist actions against UN diplomats several years ago. But Talabani is an extraordinary man. In many ways, he should be on the cover of Time and Newsweek. He and Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki have been working around the clock to fight back against the radicals, to marshal Iraqi forces, military forces, to fight al-Qaeda, the Mahdi army, and these other terrorist movements. Talabani and Prime Minister Maliki are working closely with the United States, with Great Britain, and others. They have passed a constitution. They have had three national elections. Talabani, President Jalal Talabani, is the first ever democratically, constitutionally elected president in the history of Iraq, going back to the Garden of Eden.
Huh.
I mean, you know, and it's an amazing thing. Here's a man who loves Thomas Jefferson, who is talking about the importance of expanding freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of association, freedom of speech. You know, I'm up here speaking to you on a cell phone from northern Iraq, which is the region known as Kurdistan, and the president of Iraq is Kurdish, Jalal Talabani.
Hmm.
And Kurdistan is the freest portion of all of Iraq. I mean, literally, when you go through security checkpoints here, Peter, and they say to you, they want to know, you know, they want to make sure you're not a terrorist or something, and as soon as you tell them you're a Christian and you show them your Bible or you show them your American passport, they wave you right through. They're so pro-American and even pro-Christian up in this region, which is five provinces out of Iraq's 18 provinces, and it's this free section that the president of Iraq comes from. So you just get a sense of how much different this country is. The last president of Iraq was Saddam Hussein.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, Joel,
we've come a long way from Saddam Hussein, the butcher of Baghdad.
No doubt about it. Is this emboldening the reformers in Iran as well? How's that going?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, and it's hard to know the correlation right now between the reformers in Iraq and the reformers in Iran. I know emboldening, I'm not sure is the right word. It's certainly raising expectations among reformers in Iran. I've got friends, Iranian friends, who have visited back to their family members and friends over the last several years, and they tell me that all of their Iranian friends and family members come up to them when they visit Iran and they say, "When's George Bush going to liberate us?" I mean, there's a sense inside Iran that people are so horrified by President Ahmadinejad and the radicals that run Iran right now at the government level that they want a liberation. They want a regime change. Whether or not they're going to be able to get it is still a huge and open question. And, of course, it's a very sensitive topic here in Iraq. There was an eight-year Iran-Iraq war, of course, in the 1980s. President Talabani is trying to build at least as peaceable a relationship with Iran as possible. He is planning to leave for Iran in the next couple of days, and he has even invited the president of Iran here to northern Iraq to visit in the not-too-distant future. Iraq has to be very careful with Iran as a neighbor. But there's no question that throughout the region, people are looking at Iraq and wondering if the Iraqis get it right, if they actually build a successful, not a perfect democracy, but a successful operating democracy. Yes, millions and millions of people in other countries are saying, maybe we could have that too, which makes Iraq probably the central battleground right now between the radicals and the reformers. The reformers know if they build a successful operating democracy here, it could be the model for countries throughout the region. But if the reformers lose and the radicals take over, we could see an explosion of radicalism and Islamic Jihad terrorism for generations to come.
Boy, Joel, there are some rare opportunities, aren't there, both governmentally and spiritually in the country? And thanks again for your perspective. From Iraq, Joel Rosenberg.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, just to give you one other example of the freedom of religion, at least here in the northern part of Iraq, we may close on this part, is Jeremy and I from the Joshua Fund were able to go do a humanitarian relief project in one of the public schools here in this area. We were able to distribute backpacks to needy school children at one of the poorer schools, backpacks filled with all kinds of school supplies. Joshua Fund provided those supplies in the backpacks.
Mm-hmm.
Joshua Fund also provided the school desks and furniture for many of the classrooms at that school. And prior to that, Christian materials, books and Bibles for children were able to be distributed at that school, where it's a mixture of Muslim and Christian children attending that school. Now, you think about that. We have so little access to public schools in the United States, many Christian ministries, and yet here in Iraq, we're being invited to bless the children with things they need practically as students, but also things they need spiritually as children who want to learn more about Christianity and about Jesus Christ. And that's just one other thing. We are investing in a Christian radio station. It's not quite up on the air, but they just tested the equipment that we helped them purchase, and it looks like they're getting ready to go. They need one more approval from the government, and soon they may not only be able to have a Christian radio station in northern Iraq, but there is the possibility that that could be a Christian radio network heard all over Iraq. Christian music, pastors teaching, teaching of the word verse by verse, book by book, the gospel, as well as Christian dramatic programming. Really quite amazing developments. It's something that Joshua Fund is very involved in, and we'd ask people to be praying for us that all those details would come together, and hopefully, Lord willing, by the end of this year, that station, that Christian radio station in Iraq, would be on the air by the end of this year.
Wow, we love to hear that, of course, on these airways, and just think of the gospel spreading across Iraq in that radio realm.
Yeah, this is an FM radio station that would be operating here in the north. It was originally conceived as a local station, a regional station. It would be the equivalent of a station that could be heard all throughout New Mexico or Florida or Texas or what have you, California. But now there are some doors that seem to be opening. We need to pray that Joshua Fund may be able to help finance the ability for that station to be picked up by a larger set of networks that would then be allowing it to be the Christian programming to be heard all over the country on an FM station right in the same dial with all kinds of secular and Islamic programming. So something really quite dramatic to be praying for, and we'd love to mobilize people to pray. In the next week or so, we'll have some updates on the joshuafund.net website.
We'll look for it, and we will be praying with you about the Iraqi Free Christian Radio. Thank you, Joel.
We have to get you over here to broadcast at some point.
That'd be great. Thank you so much for your update. We look forward to, again, the book is coming out in the spring, documenting your travels here, Inside the Revolution, right?
That's right. March 10th, Inside the Revolution will launch from Tyndale, and people can find out more about that soon at joelrosenberg.com.
Thank you, Joel.